We're going to start here. What we're going to do today is talk about why it's so important to know that he actually was resurrected. I think we've heard it too many times and don't realize dead and walked out. And that same dead and walked out Almighty God conquering death, not only giving us heaven, but all the power we need in our lives. All the power. It took me so long to really begin, just, you never grasp it completely, to begin. Because when I first came to Sheridan House in 1974, I came to Sheridan House and I was going to rescue Sheridan House. And there were three other employees and we had one little piece of junk children's home over in the Hollywood area. And it was a disaster. And the first 7 years was a disaster. And I was trying to make it happen and make it happen and make it happen. And I finally realized, you know what, I need to do the ministry rather than make it. I'm watching the power of God and the things he did. And I know I've told this story before, but every Monday morning, Monday mornings at 6:30 and Wednesday mornings at 6:30, I go to two different Publixes in a almost 30-year-old panel truck, and they'd give us free groceries if I'd show up by 6-something. And I'd go get it. The truck died. And I took it to a friend. He said, we don't have these parts anymore. Nobody has parts for something this old. And I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I've got a little Chevy Cavalier. I guess I could go back 4 times. And you have to be my age to remember these names. Vern Denherter, Norm Evans, and Mike Colon, all on the Dolphins. Anybody remember those names at all?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Two guys of my age. Thank you. Anyway, on the Dolphins, they come and they say, what can we do? We want to do something for you. And I said, I don't know. And Norm says, well, do you need anything? I said, well, honestly, yeah. I mean, we're desperate for a pickup truck. And Vern Denherter says, I do the commercials for Hollywood Dodge. Let me make a phone call. And I said, you want to make it from here? There's a phone right there. And they're laughing, and he makes the phone call. And the guy calls Vern back later on in the day. And Vern says, Norm and I are bringing you a truck, free. And I was like, how'd you do that? And I'm doing that because you're beginning to realize you're not helping me. I don't need any help. I got this. Trust me. This whole passage begins here that we're looking at after the Sabbath, which means after the crucifixion and after the Saturday Sabbath, and he's in the tomb. At the first day of the week, which means Sunday, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. It's interesting to me, the men did not. And this is really important. The men were hiding. They're in the upper room with the door locked. They know they're going to be the next to go. They're hiding. And here's the other reason I think they're hiding. This didn't go like I thought. It was so obvious the way it was supposed to go. It didn't go like I thought. It didn't go like I expected. In fact, twice at least we know they were arguing over who's going to be his vice president when he became the leader. Who's going to be his guy. And they're arguing about it. And he hears them both times. And one time he hears it and gets up and washes their feet. To show them, you're missing leadership. You're completely missing leadership. So the ladies go to the tomb, the men are hiding. There was a violent earthquake. And why? For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. This is one of the funniest, to me anyway, scenes. Rolls back from the stone and just plops himself on top of it. Just kind of looking around. We know the soldiers passed out. But it's just like, of course we could do this. The king was in there, the creator. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were white as snow and the guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. They passed out. Now these are legionnaries. These are warriors. So this happened and these guys, I mean, they can tell the story. Because they have to be able to tell something. How did you let him out of the tomb? How did you let the disciples come and steal him? That's why we put you there. That's not the way it happened. And they tell the story, and I am sure they're told, tell that to no one else, nobody else. Like dead men, the angel said to the women, do not be afraid, for I know you were looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. You know, guys, he said over and over and over, in 3 days, I'll come back from the dead. I'll be resurrected. You would have thought, are you listening? You would have thought they would have gotten bleachers, sold tickets, made a fortune. Let's be sitting there. This is going to be unbelievable. Because they didn't listen, they missed the miracle. Really important. If I don't listen, I miss the miracle. I get in the way. I'm a control freak. I want to make it happen. Yeah, yeah. Then go quickly and tell his disciples. He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you to into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. The tenderness of this. Remember, women in this culture were irrelevant. The tenderness of this, of Almighty God wanting to help them and meet with them. It's just, it's about a sweet, an Abba Father moment. Met them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. This is the greatest event ever in the history of man. And we get so much information on it. But it's a difference between getting information and believing it to the point where, okay, he can do anything. Absolutely anything. They're awestruck, yet they're joy struck. They're awestruck with who, yet they're joy struck. Wow. So it's true. It's true. Now you're right, somebody said about the different theories. There are three basic theories on the empty tomb. One theory is his disciples got there and stole the body and did something with it to make it look like he was resurrected. We know the disciples didn't do that, and we'll finish this study on how we know they didn't do that. They didn't prop up a lie by the way each of them lived their lives after they realized the truth. They did not steal the body. In the book Born Again, Chuck Colson talks about how the eight guys with Richard Nixon tried to prop up a lie about Watergate and tried to prop it up. They made it less than a week. These are Ivy League grads. They made it less than a week. The first one to come out was John Dean. No, that's not really what happened, what we've been saying, we've been lying, and then Chuck Colson, and then on and on and on. These uneducated guys, what they're going to end up doing with the rest of their lives, they're not propping up a lie by any means. The other was the swoon theory. The swoon theory is that he's on the cross and doesn't really die. He goes into a coma, then he's put in the tomb, and because it's cool, because it's cool and moist in the tomb, he comes back to life. Now, okay, he comes back to life with two pierced hands, two pierced feet, walks to the stone, somehow from the inside, pushes the stone away. All that was done to him, now, and stabbed. No, yeah, none, zero, swoon theory. Because no one, if it really is a crucifixion and he's dead, then I've got to change. I've got to realize, look at this. Yeah, what does Easter prove? It proves that Jesus was resurrected. It proves that Jesus conquered death. Jesus conquered death. Yeah, so what does that mean for me? He conquered death for me. And it's so interesting, this thing that took place 2,000 years ago changed the calendar forever, before Christ, after Christ. Yeah, born of a virgin, gathered followers, performed miracles, raised Lazarus from the dead, which is why there were so many people there Palm Sunday. Word got out from all the people around Lazarus' tomb that knew he was dead and been in the tomb too long. And remember, she even said, he stinks. Don't do this. His body's going to stink by now. Lazarus, come forth. Disciples, how did you miss it, these disciples? How did you miss this? You were with him. All these things, feeding of the 5,000, all these things, you missed it. And there's going to be another 500 people in a day or so. They're also going to see him as he's ascending. Yeah, this is part of history. His story is part of history. And it changed our lives. And sometimes he does things in your life because you're settling for less. Twice before this campus, we had two other properties. One was the Christ the Rock property before Christ the Rock had it. And it was the Child Evangelism Fellowship Campgrounds. And we had a deal, and I don't know what happened with the deal, but we lost it, and it's about 19 acres, and I couldn't believe we lost it. And I was very upset. And then out on Sheridan Street, there's 27 acres that we went after on the other side of 75, and now it's the Academic Village, and we lost that. And I went for a long ride, and I'm done. We're never going to have property. I don't know what I was thinking, that little teeny Sheridan house is going to have more property. And I knew we needed 40 to do all we wanted to do, and bottom line, I just thought, 40 acres in Broward County? I don't think so. And then it's Rick Hornsby that says, you know, there's 57 to 60 acres on Flamingo Road near 595. And I said, so? And I said, do you know what they're asking? He said, yeah, they're asking $500,000 an acre. Yeah. And I'm looking at him. He said, let's go make an offer. And I said, what should we offer? And he said, so instead of $500,000 an acre, I offered $50,000 an acre. And I can't even look at the guy. Yeah, I'm a really good negotiator when it comes to business deals. I know a lot about business. So anyway, he says, how about $53,000 an acre? What I didn't know is he was the GNC Vitamin King, and he bought this property for 53, and he bought it to build factories to send vitamins to South America, and he discovered these homes over here aren't allowing factories to be here. And so we go to lunch. We say yes, we go to lunch, and the other three businessmen, Rick and two others, are looking at me saying, you don't look happy. And I said, we just committed to $3.1 million. And he said, how much does Sharon House have? I said, we have $10,000. And I'm talking to my son on the phone, who's a freshman or sophomore in college. And he says, Dad, you've been an interim in so many churches. Ask each church to buy an acre. And they did. And then other people weighed in and bought acres. And then I remember pulling up there to pray on the property. And I remember as I'm there praying on the property, I say to Jesus, if I never get to see one building, I'm good. I can't believe we get to do this. And I, well, not once a week, but close, just pulling up there and praying. And then in 2000, we didn't build anything in 2003. And in 2004, we didn't build anything. And I've told you the story before. And Broward County, tax assessor, whatever you call them, decides that we didn't use it for religious or nonprofit purposes. So we need to pay the taxes on the property, $67,000 a year, each year. And we petition and lose and petition and lose and petition and lose and petition and lose. And honestly, in all of this, we finally get before the Broward County Commission. And the chairman of the Broward County Commission is, interestingly enough, a very good friend of mine, Lori Parrish. We wouldn't probably vote on anything the same, but we just happen to be friends. And she's chairman, and we're losing in this evening event. And she says, is Dr. Barnes here? And I think, oh gosh, Father. And so I said, yes, ma'am. She said, would you stand up? So I stood up. She said, did you pray on this property in 2003? Yes, ma'am. Did you pray on this property in 2004? And everybody wonders what's going on, but the commissioners finally get it and they're laughing. Yes, ma'am. She said, I think that's religious. Waive the taxes. You find out that Jesus, just get out of the way, Bob. You're making this thing so complicated. Resurrection is true. It's a reality. Yeah, Easter or Resurrection Sunday shows the extent of his quest for us. Shows the extent to me of his power. It's incredible. But his love for us, he couldn't have heaven without you. He couldn't imagine heaven without you. Wow. We have a tradition in my house. And the tradition in my house is the Saturday before Mother's Day, I make eggplant parmesan. It's the only thing I know how to make. I spent one summer in Newark living with an Italian family, and Grandma Sicati didn't speak a lick of English. She's right off the boat from Sicily, and she really believed every man needed to know how to make one thing. And so she spent the summer and taught me how to make eggplant parmesan, and it's incredible. And so we have started now. I would make it, and then Roby and I would make it, and then now it's me, Reuben, and Judah making it, and now we're adding Nehemiah, and we all have chef's hats, and it's absolutely hilarious. And I look so forward to them being there. He looks so forward to you being there. So, you're Abba Daddy. And I hope you have your little invisible card in your pocket when you get to go for a walk with him. Lord, can you explain this to me? This happened. And this happened. And I've been waiting to get here to ask some questions. Yeah. He created us with the capacity to choose to love him. He already loved us. And there's an awe and a love. You were resurrected. And you could have died and resurrected to heaven. But you chose to come out to show people that would show us. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So the byproduct of that, when I was 16, my mom died, and my grandma, Nana, came to live with us in New York for a month, and I was a disaster. I'm the oldest, and I tanked. When I was very close to my mom, and I tanked. And so she sent Aunt Jean to live with us for a couple of months. Aunt Jean, no one would take Aunt Jean on. No professional wrestler, no one. Aunt Jean could flat bring it, owned a diner in the middle of nowhere, could take anybody out. And she came to live with us, and she had this crass saying she would use, "Bobby, for Christ's sake, what are you doing?" And it wasn't until later, and it was always in my head because it was always funny to me, I realized that is the question. For Christ's sake, what are you doing? What are you saying? What are you giving? Yeah, the disconnect here is they're trying to take away our knowledge of he came back for us. Now the hurdle between me and my Father is he can't look on sin, and I'm a sinner. All of us are sinners. And so what he does is he meets us where we're at, dies on the cross. We accept that payment for the sin. But if my sin's not covered and paid for, I have no relationship. I can do all the religious exercises I want. I can show up in church, sing in the whatever. I miss it. God meets us where we are and brings us toward himself through the study of the Bible. You know, many times somebody will come to me and say, and it's usually weird times, like right before service, and say, "God gave me a word for you." I love when they do that. And I said, "So where is it?" Because this is the word of God. And I think we're told not to add or take away from this. So where is it? No, I got, this is all I need. This is all you need. Spending time getting it. Yeah. Our decisions to trust him and to trust him. And then not just our decisions, but our actions that reveal that we trust him. The sin gap. Yeah, the sin gap separated me completely. There's nothing I can do religious enough. Yeah. But there was still a gap between me and God, a gap that I cannot overcome. My sin separates me from a relationship with God. Sin separates me. And there's the verse in Romans we're going to look at, fall short of the glory of God. You know, we like to have hierarchies of sin. That's a really bad sin. And it's generally the sin that's not my sin problem. Mine's not that. And it seems to me every era we have the bad one. I remember in the late 70s, I wrote a book called Single Parenting, my first book, and it was about how to be a single parent. And I got banned in some churches because they said I was affirming divorce. And it was bizarre to me. And I got rescued by two people. I got rescued by Dobson and Swindoll, who picked it up and ran with it. But that was the era where divorce was. And we have them all. It doesn't matter really how far short you fall in making the leap to heaven. I mean, if you fall this short, this short, this short, you fall short. Done. Dead. Yeah, the picture here is my sin separates me from a relationship with God. Well, Lord, what can I do? That's the whole point. I did it all. And it was planned from the beginning. From the very, very beginning. Yeah. For all have sinned and fall short. And fall short. All of us. All of us fall short. Yeah. And it was prepared for. In Genesis, the original sacrifices. And then in Exodus, when they were told, okay, come, we're going to celebrate the Passover. Bring the lamb. Bring your little lamb on Passover. And it's not a coincidence that Jesus was crucified on Passover weekend. During that time period in there. It's just, do you guys get it? You're bringing the lamb? You're bringing the lamb. And it's not a coincidence that the temple herd of sheep was in Bethlehem. Those lambs were born where the lamb was born. And it's like later on, when some people, and apparently many Pharisees woke up later on and realized, a few initially, and then many. And for us, it's, we gotta get it. We got to get it here. We got to get it. I can't be religious. It's so funny because there have been people coming to me from an interim I was at that don't want to go to that interim anymore, and it's a Southern Baptist interim, and I ask them, where do they live? And they said, well, we live up North Federal Highway. And I said, Coleridge Pres is awesome. And I can't tell you how many people I've heard say, I don't think I could become a Presbyterian. And said, you're not becoming a Presbyterian, you're being a Christian. You're being a Christian. And he's got a really strong pulpit. And he loves Jesus. Wow. It's not about a religion. It's about a relationship. And the problem is, if we do, you know, there's two words you can use for just doing things brainlessly. One is, well, you know, I do that routinely. The other is, oh, I do that religiously. And I don't know about you, but at 5:15 this morning, I backed out of my driveway, got down the street, had to turn around because I couldn't remember whether I'd shut the garage door or not. And I have to go back. And I'm getting used to saying out loud, which Rosemary thinks is hilarious, I just shut the garage door. But I didn't do it. I had to go all the way back because I do it religiously. In other words, mindlessly. And so many things like that in life, we just get used to, I'm following the rules, I think. And that was me with Bill Billingsley. I mean, Bill Billingsley, and I've told this before, we're sitting there, and it was my first Sunday, it was my first event in a Southern Baptist church, and he was real big on giving, and I open up the bulletin, and there's a word I'd never seen before called tithy, and he's going to talk about tithies. And I said to Rosemary, unfortunately too loud, because the people behind me started laughing, and Rosemary said, it's called tithe. And the sad thing is, I've been a Christian for 5 years, and never been in a church that talked about giving. And so Billingsley talks about tithing, and 10%, are you kidding, 10%? And I called and said, can we get lunch? And we get lunch, and this was a mistake on my part, but we get lunch. And I said, so I got some questions, is it the net or the gross? Yeah. And he says, well, who do you trust to take care of you most? The government? Then you give to the government first. Jesus? You give to Jesus first and the government after. And he looks at me because I'm not computing. He says, it's the gross. He said, but you're focusing on the wrong thing. Tithing is obedience. That's why we have two words together. Tithe and offering is the joy. This was really hard for me. And so I said, so Pastor, what's an offering? And he said, are you asking me what I do? And I said, yeah, I guess I am. He said, well, I started tithing, and then I started adding 1% a year to the tithe. So I had the privilege of following him after he died and being the interim there for a little over a year. And I called for the financial records only to see what he gave. And the guy, it wasn't in him. And so Claude came down the hall, and I said, you know what I really want to know? He says, yeah, you want to know what everybody wants to know that nobody got to know but me because I handled the finances. He was a 50% giver. Really? I said, he had a mountain home. He said, yeah, look what Jesus did. It's a form of worship, a form of trust. And then, unfortunately, that same week, Chuck Swindoll's on the radio talking about tithing is for third world Christians. Those of us here need to be bringing it. Yeah, this Jesus, in the beginning was the Word, notice the capital W, and the capital W Word was with God, and the Word was God. Wait a minute, it's not this Word, it's something more. And he was with God in the beginning, through him all things were made. So through the Word, through Jesus, yeah, he spoke the world into existence. All things were made, without him nothing was made. That has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. And so that we don't miss it and get tied up in words, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and full of truth. This is who we're talking about, who came for you, who loves you. Yeah, people missed it because they followed the routine of religion rather than accept the gift of a relationship with God. Oh, Bob, if I've still got you on earth, son, I've got stuff for you to do. I've got stuff for you. And we so often think it's stuff for other people to do. And I think when we get to heaven and meet the disciples, we're going to be in shock. Really? You were one of the disciples? And realize he took average people like us. Because when they get all in, well, I'm going to read it in a minute. It's unbelievable what they do. Yeah, what does the resurrection prove? The resurrection proves that Jesus is God, Creator God, Almighty God. Spoke the world into existence, healed, conquered death. The resurrection proves that it has always been the plan. There has always been a plan. This was the plan. Yeah, John 3:16. For God so loved the world, loved you guys, that he gave his only begotten son because he loves you. Easter proves Jesus is God. Easter proves the continuity, the perfect continuity of the plan. Easter proves the compassion of Jesus for each of us. For each of us. For each of us. Yeah, Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And this isn't harsh. It's a warning. No one gets to the Father but through me. But I died to make that possible because I have a plan for you and a life for you later. No, not a hoax. This was not a hoax. This changed everything. And honestly, I think one of the extra special privileges of working at a place like this is you see things arrive that you need and didn't know where to get them, or you see things arrive that you didn't know you needed and need it the next day. When Best Roofing called and said, do you need a panel truck? And we didn't know we needed it, but I just don't say no. And I know that people think we go find these things. And I tried that for the first 7 years, and it didn't work. Do your job, Bob. Do your job. But also, I think, I love this verse, unto him who's able to do, it's Ephesians 3:20, for unto him who's able to do exceedingly and abundantly beyond all we would ask or imagine. And that's a knowledge, but there's a charge in 21, verse 21. To him be the glory, not you, Bob. To him be the glory forever and ever, amen, is so pivotal and absolutely mandatory. Yeah, I mean, the disciples hiding in an upper room, door locked, Jesus walks through the wall. I'm thinking pass out time. He walks through the wall and he talks to them. One was missing. This is interesting to me. Thomas was missing. Thomas shows up. Jesus isn't there. He leaves. Thomas shows up and they tell Thomas what they saw. And he said, yeah, how much have you guys been drinking? Come on. And he said, I will not believe unless I see the holes in his hands. Jesus comes back through the wall and Jesus says, look at the holes, touch the holes, stick your finger in the holes. And Thomas didn't need to do it. My Lord and my God. So how did each of these guys die? These guys got it and went all over the world, walked all over the world sharing the gospel. They got it. They knew. They weren't like the Chuck Colson group that couldn't make it a week with a hoax. We know it wasn't a hoax. One of the realities is, how did each of these people die? Simon Peter, crucified upside down in Rome because he wouldn't stop preaching in Rome about Christ. Now, we don't know this thing I'm going to say. It's believed that when they're getting ready to crucify him, he says, don't crucify me like Christ, crucify me upside down. We don't know that's true. Some believe that's true. Really, rather than begging for his life, I'll be quiet. No, I can't be quiet. Because here's what else I know. To live is Christ, to die is gain. If I have to keep living, it's for Christ. When I get to go to heaven, I get it all. James stayed in Jerusalem and preached and started the first church. He was beheaded by Herod in AD 44 for preaching the gospel. Andrew went to Greece. Remember, these guys aren't catching a plane. They walked. Went to Greece in Asia Minor, preaching. He was martyred on a St. Andrew's cross because he wouldn't stop preaching. Philip preached the gospel in Hierapolis, where he was martyred for preaching the gospel. Bartholomew preached the gospel in Armenia, where he was flayed to death. That means whipped until all the skin was off his body and died. Because he knew. And this is amazing. Thomas, the doubter, walked to India preaching the gospel, where he was martyred for his... If he's referred to as the doubter, I don't want to know my nickname. I'll pass on whatever they want to give me for a nickname. Matthew, down to Ethiopia, where he was martyred, preaching the gospel. James the Less, Egypt, martyred, preaching the gospel. Jude, all the way to Persia, and was killed because of his faith. And Simon, crucified, not Simon Peter, the other Simon, crucified for his faith. Hoax? I don't think so. They saw the evidence. They saw Jesus. They finally, after all this time, realized, okay, we weren't listening. We weren't listening to who he is, how much he loves, what he's done, what he wants to do through us. And they walk all over the known world at that time, sharing the gospel, even knowing what's going to happen. And here's the sweet thing. Only one disciple wasn't martyred, John. He was boiled in oil once and somehow lived. He was given an assignment from the cross. John, behold your mother. Mary, behold your son. In other words, John, take care of my mom. Made it to almost 90 years old. Wow. It was all planned out, and it's still planned out for you. And if you're still here, and can I say most of you are still here, if you're still here, he's got something for you to do. When he's done, he's not going to waste any time. He's going to bring you home. It's what we say. It's how we bless the people around us. It's how we be radically generous. Why would you give that much? Radically. And here's the hardest part. It really counts when I'm gracious to people I don't like. It really counts when I'm gracious to people I really, really disagree with on things. And can I say, we are in the era of disagreement. And we've gotten a bad reputation. And I know Jesus has to be shaken and said, Bob, that's why I've got you next to that person. For that reason. Yeah, we were flying up to the mountains two Thursdays ago. And I have a very self-centered prayer. There's three seats. And my prayer generally is, Lord, could we have nobody? Just Rosemary and I have the whole row, nobody. And when the tickets are $39, there's going to be somebody that's never empty out on Allegiant Airlines. The seats don't tilt back. It's the most uncomfortable thing on the planet. But I'm really cheap and 39 works. And we got the most obnoxious person next to us. And when I sat there and she realized I had my Bible and this opened on this little tray that's about this big, trying to do some studying, and she's trying not to look. And I don't know how Rosemary engaged her. It was so sweet. And engaged her in a conversation as only Rosemary could do. And listening to how deep in that hour and 20 minutes it got, it was like, that's what we're supposed to do. And I was thinking, when we got off the plane, I was thinking, how self-centered am I? Lord, put nobody in that seat. I don't want anybody there. And Rosemary's just waiting for him so she can share with him. We're supposed to share. Yeah, I need to accept that it's not a hoax. And then I need to accept you love me, you have a plan for me, and you want to use me to help change lives for the glory of God.